scripture reading is it's Hebrews 13, verses 1 through 6. Keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by so doing, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. Continue to remember those in prison as if you were together with them in prison, and those who are mistreated as if you yourselves were suffering. Marriage should be honored by all, and the marriage bed kept pure, for God will judge the adulterer and all the sexually immoral. Keep your lives free from the love of money, and be content with what you have, because God has said, "Never will I leave you, never will I forsake you." So we say with confidence, "The Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What can mere mortals do to me?"
You guys remember the show Fear Factor? I don't think it's on anymore, but it was like a weird, it was like a game show, reality show kind of thing, and they had these people doing like ridiculous, gross stuff, like walking tightrope or eating bugs, and if they could do all the scary things, if they could face their fears, then there was a prize at the very end. I have some examples, some pictures to show you. Like, you have to sit in a bathtub full of scorpions, or the spider pit. I love the look on the spider pit guy's face. He just, it's like not even a look of fear, it's like a look of sheer regret. Like, he just, this is the worst decision I've ever made. Or like, you gotta be covered with bees. So they had them do these crazy things to get a prize. And if they could handle the fear, they got the prize. But if they buckled under the fear, then they didn't. So the fundamental question of the whole show was, is the prize worth enduring the fear? And I think that's a little bit similar to the situation that the Hebrews Christians find themselves in. Before we really get into the book of Hebrews, I want to give you a little background. Tradition says that the book, the letter of Hebrews, was written to Jewish Christians primarily. That's why it was addressed to the Hebrews. That's kind of what people tend to think. There's not really a reason to believe it was written specifically to Jewish Christians. The letter probably disseminated widely. It was probably written to people from a lot of different backgrounds. But whatever the case, it was written to people who came from some kind of a cultural setting, some background, and they came out of that background when they became Christians and they started to live differently. Just like Steve preached here a few weeks ago, just like we were called to do, they started to live differently. So in their pre-Christian context, they did some things and they went some places and they had some relationships that stopped when they became Christians. But when they did that, they started to get backlash from society. As they start to pull away from the aspects of culture that ran counter to their beliefs, they came under fire from associates and neighbors and even friends and family who thought that they could like bring them back to their senses. They became victims of society's attempts to pull them back in line with its values. So if they came from a Jewish background, that meant that they were encouraged to continue in temple worship. It meant that they were encouraged to keep upholding an old law. It meant they were encouraged to shun non-Jewish people. Or if they came from a Greek or Roman background, it could be even worse because Christians may have been perceived as a threat. Because for Greeks and Romans, they worshipped a lot of different gods, and each of those gods was responsible for taking care of society in some way. The Greco-Roman gods upheld order in society. They brought political stability. They promoted good agriculture and healthy crops. And so if you abandon those gods to become a Christian, then you are a threat to society. So regardless of where the people are coming from when they become Christians, non-Christian culture is trying to bring shame on them. They're trying to frighten them, to scare them out of Christianity and back into society. And it seems like at first the Christians were doing a pretty good job of kind of sticking to their guns. Like they were doing a good job of upholding the faith. Look in Hebrews chapter 10, and we get kind of this picture of what life might have been like. This is Hebrews 10, 32 through 34. It says, "Recall the former days when after you were enlightened, you endured a hard struggle with sufferings, sometimes being publicly exposed to reproach and affliction, and sometimes being partners with those so treated. for you had compassion on those in prison, and you joyfully accepted the plundering of your property, since you knew that you yourselves had a better possession and an abiding one. Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has great reward." So it looks like early on, these Christians, they're doing a good job of enduring this. And it says they endured a hard struggle with sufferings. It even says they joyfully accepted the plundering of property. They weren't afraid of society's attempts to shame them and scare them because they knew there was a prize and the prize was going to be worth it. But unfortunately, that fervor, that kind of strength of faith is starting to wane a little bit. They're getting worn down. They used to be strong, they used to be enduring, but now, not so much. Now there's this fear, a fear that where they were before was right, that moving on to Christianity was a bad move. There's a fear they're going to miss out on something, that if they stick with the Christian faith, society's going to leave them behind. So they're starting to question whether or not the prize is going to be worth the fear. And I think the author wants to remind them that they need to not be afraid. They need to stick with it, because if they do, the prize is going to be worth it. And at the root of all of the fear for these Hebrews Christians is discontentment. They don't have the things the rest of the world has. They can't enjoy the things the rest of the world is enjoying. And maybe they're thinking, man, it sure would be nice to enjoy those things. And so at the close of this Hebrews message, in chapter 13, the writer offers some practical advice. Chapter 13 starts with a short list of things to focus on so you won't be overcome with fear and discontentment. He says, first, you gotta love each other. You gotta have brotherly love. Second, you need to show hospitality to strangers. Third, remember and encourage those who have been mistreated or imprisoned because of their faith. Fourth, care for your spouse. Invest in your marriage relationship. And fifth and last, he says, be satisfied with what you've got. Be content. In other words, love each other, love strangers, love those who others won't, love your spouse. But one thing not to love, he says, is money. And it seems a little out of place at the end of the list until you consider that the love of money creates a temptation not to love everything else on the list. Because when you love money, you want more of it. And that mentality of needing more starts to spill over into other areas of life. And soon you're not just dissatisfied with your money, you're dissatisfied in your marriage, you're dissatisfied in your friendships, in your status, and ultimately, you're dissatisfied in your faith. Because all around you, there are non-Christian people, and they are just living well. They have everything they want in life. They can do what they want. And they're telling you how stupid you are for following this Jesus thing. So you start to wonder if they're right. I think the Christians in Hebrews are starting to question whether or not the prize is going to be worth it. And I think there are a few ways that we are similar, things that we have in common with these Hebrews Christians. Number one, I think we're similar because we, too, live in a culture that constantly pushes us to want more than what we've got. Did you know that the average American citizen sees 3,000 to 5,000 advertisements every day? Every day. On TV, on the radio, the internet, billboards, magazines, bus stop benches, coffee shops, restaurant bulletin boards, thousands of advertisements, and they all are sending the same message. You need help being happy. Whatever you've got in life right now, it's not enough. But as soon as you get this product or this lifestyle or this image, then finally you're going to be happy. Also, like the Hebrews, I think our society has gods that we rely on to make life better. We have the gods of entertainment and relationships and success and wealth and comfort, and we're tempted and pushed to honor those gods. We're tempted to honor those gods by making sure that we have the best things, the nicest house, the biggest TV, the fanciest car. We're tempted to honor those gods by making sure that our habits and our lifestyles are going to gain us the most popularity and the most success, so the things we do are going to be the most exciting things that other people will envy us. We're tempted to honor those gods by making sure that our relationships make us happy first and foremost, and that we are the top priority in our world. And all of those things are undergirded by the feeling that we got to have more money to make that happen. And lastly, like the Hebrews, we are afraid that the rest of the world is going to enjoy life more than us. Even though we know that God ultimately has something great in store for us, it just looks like right now everyone else is kind of having a better time than we are. I've heard this called FOMO, the fear of missing out. FOMO is a thought process that says, if I keep doing what I'm doing, I might miss out on what everyone else is doing. And when we experience this fear, we get worn down. We can start to question whether or not the prize is going to be worth it. And when that happens, we are tempted to seek enjoyment and excitement in places that run counter to our faith. This kind of fear is the leading cause of buying things that we don't actually need. This kind of fear makes us look through every picture on a person's Facebook page, depressed because our life doesn't look as good as theirs. This is the kind of fear that makes a college student want to go out and have some drinks because it just looks like that's what makes life enjoyable. This is the kind of fear that makes a married person want to seek pleasure in relationships outside their marriage because it's new and exciting. It makes someone who has recovered from a damaging habit want to return to that habit because they just want to feel that high one more time. This is the fear that keeps someone working 24/7, keeping them from their family so they can earn more and more money to buy things they don't need, to impress people whose opinions don't matter. That's what this fear, this discontentment does to us. There's something I hope that you've noticed by this point, which is this conversation about contentment and discontentment is not just about money alone. I think money is important and central to the whole conversation because it reveals a lot about our priorities. But we can be discontent in a lot of things. We can be discontent in our relationships, in our career, in our hobbies and habits. We can be discontent with life. And this discontentment makes us want what we don't have. It causes us to seek out more things and other things. But the problem with this is discontentment breeds more discontentment. A first century Roman proverb warns us that money is like seawater. The more a person drinks, the thirstier he becomes. The philosopher Immanuel Kant similarly said, "Give a man everything he wants, and at that moment, everything will not be everything." The problem with discontentment is there will never be enough stuff to satisfy our broken, discontented hearts. But peace with where we are and what we have right now will mean wealth far greater than anything the world has to offer. And that is where I think the conversation has been leading this whole time. And when we go back to Hebrews 13, the author has been taking it to that conclusion as well. He's letting the Hebrews know that they can be content because the prize is worth it. They can be content because God provides. You don't have to fear you're missing out because God's going to help you. And here's the thing. God does not just promise us that one day, eventually, in the future, it's going to be worth it. He wants us to know that it's worth it now. We can be content now. Sometimes we think that contentment just means like giving your things away, giving money away. And maybe there's some truth to that. But contentment is not just about having fewer things or having less money or being okay at a lower status. Contentment is about something a lot deeper than that. It's about loving and caring for what we have now. And whether it's our money or our career or relationships, whatever it is, it's about seeking joy in the present situation. And I think that we discover the prize when we are content with what we have. Because where discontentment pushes us to want more, contentment allows us to enjoy what we have. Where discontentment causes us to take more and to keep more, contentment brings us the freedom to give more. And ultimately, I think the bottom line for us is where discontentment makes us seek glory, contentment moves us to seek God. And that's what it's really all about. It's about deeply seeking God and relying on Him. Discontentment pulls us in a direction that is not God's direction. It moves us to seek satisfaction in things that are not God, but we can only find satisfaction in Him. And I know it's not bad to want to earn your wages. It's not bad at all. It's not bad to want to own quality possessions. It's not bad to want life-giving relationships. But when our love for those things, when our reliance on those things begins to eclipse our desire for God, we're in trouble. In general, discontentment causes us to see what life brings to others and then to try to hunt that down by living in the ways that they live, because we're afraid that they're going to get to have things and they're going to get to enjoy things that we're not going to get to have or do. But we aren't called to live for those things. We're called to live for God. And if we are living for those things, then we are leaning on something that will go away at some point, but God never will. When we look in the wrong places for fulfillment, we'll always come up short. If our faith is in our money, or our career, our relationships, our status, our health, we are putting our hope in things that cannot fully satisfy, but God can. And I know there's a fear that we're going to miss out on some good stuff, but God says, don't be afraid, because I'll help you. I'm going to read verses 5 and 6 from Hebrews 13 one more time, but I'm going to read them from a translation called the Amplified Bible. It tries to bring out kind of the more impactful parts of the passage. So here's chapter 13, 5 and 6. It says, let your character or moral disposition be free from love of money, including greed, avarice, lust, and craving for earthly possessions, and be satisfied with your present circumstances and with what you have. For he, God himself, has said, I will not in any way fail you, nor give you up, nor leave you without support. I will not in any degree leave you helpless, nor forsake you, nor let you down, or relax my hold on you. So we take comfort and are encouraged and confidently and boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not be seized with alarm. I will not fear or dread or be terrified. What can man do to me? The Hebrews author is saying, you can stand up to fear, to temptation, to discontentment. You can stick with God, and if you do, it's worth it. And maybe other folks have nicer things. Maybe other folks get to keep more of their money or enjoy what they want to in life. Maybe they even try to intimidate you. Maybe they try to scare you or make you feel dumb for believing what you believe. But whatever you feel like you're missing out on, God is better. And regardless of what life throws our way, the prize is worth it. And it's not just going to be worth it one day. It's worth it now. So if you feel like you really need your money, and you want to get more of it, and you want to keep it, then find something better to give it to, because the prize is worth it. Or if you feel like your marriage is stale and you're tempted to seek pleasure elsewhere, stay faithful, because the prize is worth it. If you have an urge to revisit a bad habit that you've kicked, then stay strong, because the prize is worth it. Or if you feel pressure to live in unchristian ways so that more people will like you, so you'll see more success, then live for Christ, because the prize is worth it. Or if you are afraid to take on the mission of God and engage the world with the gospel, then have courage, because the prize is worth it. It's worth it. We can be content. We can be happy here and now, because God is with us, He's going to help us, and He's not going anywhere. I want to tell a story about a friend of mine who I think he just exemplifies this whole idea really well. My friend's name is Manny Pagadapalli. Manny is not your average Christian. Manny grew up in and lives in India, where he works at a preacher training school, and they're training about 50 guys right now to share the gospel with others. But the unique thing about Manny's setting is the culture there. The culture are not big fans of the Christians. In fact, students at the school have been beaten and abused and even killed for trying to share the gospel. last week, and I'm not talking about centuries ago, mind you, last week, one of Manny's students was killed because he wanted to tell people about Jesus. And they left his body in the village where he had been, spreading the gospel as a warning to others. And I can't imagine the fear and anxiety that that must produce. I mean, in an environment like that, they must really question if the prize is worth the fear. They must be tempted to escape that environment. And for Manny, I think this could be especially tempting because here's what I didn't tell you about Manny. He's not just a teacher at the school. Manny is also a doctor. He's a surgeon, actually. And if he were so inclined, then he could leave that environment, and he could practice medicine, and he could make a pretty good amount of money. He could avoid the fear and pressure of society. He could live in a safer location. He could be well respected by the culture. I mean, Manny could have what most people consider to be a great life. But for him, nothing is more important than reaching his people with the news of Christ. And so instead of doing any of those things, Manny works at a clinic in his village in India where he provides free medical care for people in order to create opportunities to share the gospel. And no matter the fear, no matter the doubt, no matter the struggles and temptations, he is sticking with God because he knows that God's going to help him and he knows it's worth it. And if you're thinking right now that that doesn't sound like it's worth it, then know this. In the midst of their society's scare tactics, in the middle of these very real threats and this very real fear, between the clinic and the preaching school and other evangelistic efforts, Manny and the Christians in India have seen 930 people come to Christ in 2016. He does what he does because he knows the prize is worth it. And I hope we can be like Manny. I hope that we can just unapologetically rely on God, even when everything around us is working against us. And I think that we get that a little bit. Like, we know we need God. We know God is good. But often in life, what we want is God plus some really nice blessings that we hope come along with that. We want God plus a full, secure bank account. We want God plus a nice, safe, comfortable place to live. We want God plus we want for everyone to like us. We want God plus we want our habits that we enjoy. We want to live for God and we want to do our own thing. We want God and more and more and more and more. But what we fail to realize is that God plus nothing equals everything. And if we didn't have anything but God, then we would have everything we need. So, when life hits you hard, when you're feeling down, when times are tough, God is there, and he will help you. Or when life blesses you, whenever you have everything you need, you feel like you're in good shape, God is there too, and he'll help you. When people like you and you have a lot of friends and you feel popular and well-loved, God is there and he'll help you. Or if people don't like you, if you feel rejected and alone, God is there and he's going to help you. When you feel confident and bold in your faith and you can passionately share the gospel, God is there and he'll help you. Or when you feel frightened, when you feel tempted, when you feel like you're not sure if it's worth it, God is there and he will help you. So whether you have a little or you have a lot, God will help you. And guys, we will never be satisfied until we are satisfied in God. So stick with him because it's worth it. Maybe you're here this morning and you want to take part in that satisfaction from God. Maybe you want to overcome fear and become part of the family of God through baptism. Or maybe just as I've spoken this morning, you have you started to feel kind of convicted. Maybe you feel like, man, I'm not loving and caring for what I've got in the way that I could. Maybe you want a deeper contentment. I'd be willing to bet that there's someone here this morning who is not totally content. Maybe you just want to rest in God's promise of help. Or maybe you realize that you have tried to supplement God with other things. Whatever it is, if you're having feelings like these, if you want to put on Christ in baptism, if you just need to talk, like if you just want to talk to someone or pray with someone, in just a minute here, our shepherds and ministers are going to surround this room. And if you need any of those things, you can just go to one of them and talk with them now as we stand and sing.